Yo.
Hey. Can you hear me?
You listening to Hashtag WAW. What a week.
What a week. Hey, Ta. Welcome to another episode of Wow, What a Week. We're hanging out with easily one of the sharpest lyricists in this country. Yeah, I said it. He is the bridge between street culture, fashion, lyricism, and marrying the right person. Next.
This is
Wow!
What a week.
What a week. Celebrity guest.
Celebrity guest.
Not only is he a nice guy, he is a rapper, a lyricist, he's a husband, he's a dad, he's had an interesting childhood. And back in the day, they'd call you cute. Now we just say you're pretty ugly. Please make some noise. For what's the full name?
The full name ke Sirunya.
Yeah.
Ricardo. Apollo, Dominguez, De Consensao, De Alessandra, Luca, Muloi.
Bless you.
Thank you very much.
Sounds like a very long sneeze.
So it's like, it's
I was going to say, that's what I love about Portuguese and even Afrikaans. You'll meet a guy who'll tell you, my name is Jacobus, Jakub, Janse van Rensburg, Pieterse.
Yeah.
And you're like, jeez.
Yeah.
I'd like to see the other page of your ID. Because right. Is all of that on your ID?
It's so on my birth certificate it was.
Yeah.
But when I got my ID, then they're like, okay, just
can you pick a name?
Two names, Nyana, you know, and surname.
Sure.
So my mother's surname, maiden surname, Ked Alessandra Luca Muloi. Not Muloi, but yes. Luca. My dad Muloi. So two surnames together.
Sure.
You know, in Portuguese culture, basically, like
you honor your mom also.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did mom and dad meet? Have they told you?
Yeah, they met in exile.
Yeah.
My father went into exile, you know, shortly after June 16 uprising, 1976. And he was a teenager. And he was in exile for about 15, 16 years. And in the last 4 years of his exile, he was stationed in Angola,
yes,
receiving military training. And he met my mom there. My mom was like a young teenage lady. You know, they were cool for about 4 years or so. They got married, had me, and then we moved to South Africa. So, I mean, I was born in Angola, but I was raised in South Africa. I grew up in Soweto. Midolands.
Where in Soweto? Where Midolands?
Midolands Zone 9.
Tell us what about Midolands stays in your heart to this day that you carry with you?
Oh, King, you know, I grew up, I was on set of the Brown Dash music video. I mean, I wasn't on set.
Yeah, but you were there.
I was there.
You're one of the kids you see in the background.
And I'm an Orlando Pirates fan, you know, so I'm seeing Gift Leray.
I'm sorry for it.
I mean, the last few ones haven't been too great, but you know, like win or lose, nagile pagani. And I was there watching Gift Leray, Brown Dash, shooting Vroom Vroom.
Yes.
You know, and I'm just like one of the kids there at the Midolands bus terminal. Yeah, and
I remember.
It's kind of dilapidated now. It's not like how it used to be. But that's my memory of like of Midolands, seeing my Kentlas.
Yes.
You know, RIP, you know, Arthur's big brother. Yeah, but I grew up around all these people.
No, baby brother.
Baby brother.
It was my Kentlas's baby brother.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah. I always thought it was big bro, you know? But yeah, we grew up around Mosma Bonyane, Bojagarumba.
Sure.
You know, I grew up like listening to Kwaito, and like all these guys that inspired my childhood, like, are people who see me today and they know who I am. So
absolutely.
For me, that's humbling.
So you're watching Bo Gift Leremi at the Vroom Vroom video shoot. What's the dream at that stage?
Man, the dream at that time, I think I just wanted to be just like them. I mean, at the time, King, I'm playing soccer. So I'm playing for Morocco Swallows Academy.
Yeah, on a little walk, we have ball.
I was very serious about that. But I was better at athletics though.
Oh yes.
You know? So Koskolong, you know, I'm a 100 meter, 200 meter, long jump, 800 meter athlete, breaking records. Till today they are my records go Kempton Park that have not been broken, you know.
In the old days you were that kid that would make repeat primary because we need to win again.
Come on, we need to win. You know what I'm saying, King? Yeah, so like I was that kid, you know, very, very good at sport, you know. So at that time, you know, my dream was to be at the Olympics or, you know, to be at the AFCON. Mm. I'm also watching, you know, TKZ with Benny McCarthy, and I'm seeing that. Like, I'm seeing soccer and music
and popular culture
come together, you know, and I'm like, I want to do that.
Mm.
As to how it was going to happen, I didn't know.
Mm.
I just knew I was intrigued by it. And like I said, like then I'm still a kid, you know. So
yeah.
and then I grow up just doing sports. I get to high school, and that's where the music bug really hits me.
Let's talk moving on up.
Sure.
How does Kempton Park happen? Mm-hmm. And roughly what year is this?
So this is 1996. Mm. I'm like 4 years old. Yeah, about a year or two after we gained independence, you know, now my father is comfortable modeling thing, you know, in South Africa. He's got a steady job, the ANC and the government, you know, made sure he had a good job. So he worked for the intelligence. I don't think I've actually spoken about this.
So your dad was a spy.
Yeah, you know, without saying too many words, you know, so, and it's interesting because growing up, we never knew what my dad did.
That's a good spy.
We just knew that he worked
for government.
For the government, yeah. You know, and he worked at intelligence. And I was allowed.
So all those nights you sneaked out, he was away?
Oh no, he was definitely away. King, he was so away. You know, my father, you know, we grew up like when we moved to Kempton Park, you know, we were one of the first black families to live there.
In your neighborhood?
In my neighborhood.
Yes.
And you know, it is a very Afrikaans neighborhood, you know, so I'm the result or product of like a lot of racism moving in there, you know.
Oh, yes.
And it's my father teaching me like, yo, this is where you're going to have to learn to defend yourself and speak up for yourself. And you're not going to let any person of any race, you know, step on your toes and make you feel uncomfortable, you know. So I was told from a very young age, like, you know, my father wasn't the type of person where we were like, you know, oya skolong, how about shapa, like, oh, like. Mm. You know, give them the other cheek.
There's no turning that.
You're not gonna come back and tell me horo shapi, you know. And if you did, my dad is gonna, we're gonna go find these people. We're gonna go sort them out. You know, that was so. I grew up and everyone was very afraid of my father. Mm. If they were not afraid of him, they respected him. Mm. Yeah, man, he was just like a hardworking guy. You know, growing up, my mother was a housewife, so I spent most of my time with my mom. Mm. We saw my dad. Every weekend, maybe.
You were fluent in Afrikaans before you were fluent in English.
I was, yeah.
Let's talk about that.
Yo. No, but I went to Afrikaans preschools.
Yeah.
You did your research, King.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I went to Afrikaans preschools, Afrikaans creches, Wanda Forest.
You were a boot.
Red Flay. Yeah, I was a boot.
You're like,
you know,
the swart boot.
In fact, when I was starting grade one, they almost helped me back to repeat grade zero because my English wasn't good.
Oh, yeah.
I could only speak Afrikaans, listen so too.
Mm. But that's it's a wild comp.
It's a crazy one, you know what I mean? And growing up in Kempton Park, I grew up in an area called Birch Acres. And Birch Acres, it's a very interesting one because like the suburb.
Mm.
But for suburban northern people, like they'll think,
I hear you.
You know what I'm saying?
It's like some parts of the West Rand, for instance.
It's exactly that.
Where it's a suburb, but Nalubukasinyana.
And
all Pretoria West, even.
Literally less than 2 kilometers away from where I stay, Tembisa.
Yeah.
So Tembisa, Birch Acres, that's where I grew up. And in that area, there's a colored area called Rabridge. So a lot of my friends were colored guys. I had Afrikaans friends.
I dated in Rabridge once.
Really?
Like when I was starting at Y.
I did too, actually.
In fact, she said to me, oh, we met in a club in Pretoria. And then we get into my little green golf, we're leaving a club LS. Next to Rabi Ridge. It's like, why didn't you tell me from Rabi Ridge? I've got DJ friends in Rabi.
Come on, that's crazy, really. Yeah, Rabi Ridge. I spent a lot of my time there. You know, I got my
friends. So it's the same place. I hope it was not the same house.
I hope not, you know. Yeah, I love Rabi Ridge, man. I got into a lot of trouble growing up in that area, you know. Banyana, gangsterism, a lot. But I think it was a good melting pot of like what it takes to develop a young man's character. But you know, like the issue there is I grew up in an area where not a lot of people make it.
Yes. First,
you know what
yes.
I'm saying? So it's like my OGs, the guys who are older than me, are dead in jail or still on the street corners, you know? So we didn't have a lot of people to aspire to be like in the hood.
What do you think you did differently that you survived what became fate for a lot of the guys you grew up with?
I had very strict parents.
Mm.
Yeah. And growing up, man, it was difficult. I felt like, oh, my dad, it's just so hard.
Let's actually talk about that.
Yeah.
Because I don't think enough exile kids talk about the other side of being raised by an exile parent.
Sure.
Especially a parent with military training or saw a lot of action, saw a lot of combat, dealt with a lot of trauma.
Exactly.
Because I can tell you for free, no war leaves you until you're dead.
Yeah.
Even if you survive the war.
For sure.
So it kind of been easy being raised by a dad who's been fighting for Angola. And and a lot of battles happened in Angola and Mozambique.
A lot.
So there's no way your dad didn't see action.
For sure.
So having said that, you're being raised by someone with probably post-traumatic stress. You're not even aware he's going through.
Definitely, yeah.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Because it can't be easy.
These are only things that I realized while growing up. They're like, oh, no, my father was like that because he was actually dealing with traumas.
Yes.
These people, he went into exile and under 18. He's a teenager. You know what I'm saying? Your family doesn't know where you are if you're alive for the 15, 16 years that you're away. Mm. You know? Mm. You're seeing your comrades die every day.
Yeah. Ambushes, landmines.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Ambushes, landmines, you know, so that also builds a different type of resilience. I mean, even my father, when you speak to him and you ask him like, yo, what were your dreams? Mm. You know, when you're in exile, what kept you going? He's like, yo, man, I just wished to have a family and a home.
Yeah.
Because these were things that we didn't think would happen.
And to be alive.
And to be alive. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They living each day as it is, you know, they are eating field mice. Mm. For a long time, you don't know when you're going to get called back. You don't know where the landmine is. You don't know where the snake is, you know? And, you know, growing up with a father like that, he was like very, because you need to also understand that, you know, he's in exile for 16 years or so. He comes back into South Africa and he's somewhat of a hero. Yes. But it's also like a lot of people who hadn't seen him, you know, past the cherry, past homies, he gets to engage with them again, you know?
But he's a stranger.
And he had to navigate that. Mm. You know, the world is completely different to how it was when he left it. South Africa is completely different. Mm. So, but as a result, man, like it was difficult. My father was a very loving man. But like you mentioned now, these people are dealing with traumas. They're coming out of exile and coming back into South Africa.
And they must recuperate.
Exactly. They're not given therapy.
No debrief.
I cannot debrief.
Nothing.
You know what I'm saying? So he's living a lot of his life still in that trauma. He gets triggered by a lot of
anxiety,
things. You know?
Exactly. You bang the door, that could set a guy off.
100%. You know, so
am I describing your childhood?
Yeah, you know, I'm you know, like, you know, I speak about this stuff in my music, and I think people just think it's like storytelling. Yes. Like, I get told so many times, like, oh, you're such a great storyteller.
In fact, I was having a conversation with someone that knows you,
sure,
and they were saying that, you know, a lot of people think that Pretty Ugly's music is dope stories. They don't know that if he says it happened.
Yeah, it's the truth, King.
Yeah.
And only people who really know me will know that, you know. Yeah. People know my industry persona, and the industry persona I've just chosen to be the nice guy and smart, because I come from a lot of trauma. I come from a lot of anger. I come from a lot of fist fights. I come from a lot of trying to prove to my parents that, you know,
or to the Afrikaans kids.
Or to the Afrikaans kids. I was constantly proving myself. Because you need to understand that, like, growing up in Kempton Park is where I'm growing up in Birch Acres. I'm going to the school that I go to. A lot of the kids that I go to school with, but that's Tembisa.
Yeah.
What's a Ramaridge? So for them, Kichis boy, because I'm in the suburbs.
Yes.
Mara, you know, when I'm in the suburbs, I'm too ghetto for the suburban kids.
Absolutely.
So it was like I always had to constantly find myself and find my tribe. And that shifted from.
Or code switch between the two.
Exactly. You know, so, some point, some, you know, sometimes I'm hanging out with people and they think I'm colored because now the accent needs to change when I'm with my color bros, you know? And when I'm with my Indian squad, it becomes something else. My Chitakukasi becomes something else, you know? But like, you know, like I said, you know, we're speaking about, you know, being raised by a parent who went into exile. But because my father was grew up around so much trauma, for him, he's like he could not have a weak child. So I was that kid when my father would like, yo, make me do soccer drills in the backyard until 9 p.m. Teka, teka, until a sharp 100, you're not coming back inside this house to eat.
And he meant it.
And I'm doing it till I'm crying. And growing up, I used to feel like that's all so hard. How do you do that to your child? But it's also like what made me very lit.
Resilient, even.
It made me very resilient. It actually is what actually made me good at the soccer. It actually is what made me good at everything that I did. It's like I never give up. I never gave up with anything I did. I was very resilient. You couldn't tell me I can't do it. And also, you know, I was also just trying to prove to my father that I was, you know, because for him it's like, yo, you guys, le weak, man. You know, you guys don't know what it took to get here. You know, so I'm trying to prove to him that like, I can be the man that he thinks I'm not. You know.
Do you ever feel like your drive to impress dad often follows you even where it shouldn't?
Yeah, no, 100%. 100%. A lot of times it's gotten me into trouble, but a lot of the times it's what's kept me here. You know, because even in as much as he was strict, my dad was like, that bro, like, against a Chuck Taylor high, it's always clean. So Lentwana is not going to be in the streets with some dirty ass shoes, you know?
Yeah, it must be
You know,
disciplined.
I've got hidings if my youngest sister's shoes were dirty. And for me, it's like, no, but it's her shoes. She's making them dirty. It's like, no, you're the older brother. How can you have clean shoes and your sister doesn't? And in being an adult, it's taught me now, you know? Like I didn't understand it as a kid, but now that I'm older, it's like, yeah, I can't let my wife leave with this dirty shoes or my daughter. You know what I'm saying? So it's taught me to really take care of a family, you know, even in
It's a code
as
of sense.
harsh
Yeah, it's a
the
code of
lessons were.
sense.
Exactly, a hundred
Yeah.
percent, you
That
know.
if I'm eating, we're eating. If I'm clean, we are clean.
Right, you know what I'm saying? Like I used to miss shows when I was still on my come up because like, you know, I'm trying to do my chores before I need to leave home, clean a pool or whatever. And my dad would be like, no, where guy? I'm like, no, I need to go perform in your town or whatever. He's like, ah. Someone. And when you're done with that, someone clean a swimming pool. You know? And
Did you ever
but I'm so
hate?
thankful for that.
But then, did you ever hate him?
Yes, I did, yeah. I did.
And how did that manifest?
We had a very difficult relationship, you know, and as a result, I seeked validation in the wrong people. You know, so the people who then did become open to me were the gangsters because they were simply just protecting me, actually, you know. Then I didn't realize, I just thought, like, all right, all these guys, they just like me, you know. But it's also like, yo, they actually have respect for my father, and they're also trying to make sure Laitia doesn't turn out to be like all
Trials.
these other kids, you know what I'm saying? So I'm being defended and being protected by the gangsters, the bigger homies, you know. But as a result, because I'm also trying to impress them, I'm getting into trouble, you know. And I'm also just trying to prove to my dad that I'm that guy, you know, one of the homies maybe who he spoke to off air has had to bail me out of jail a few times, you know. But you know, even in all the darkness was like there was a lot of light, you know. My father, I excelled in everything I did because of him as well, you know, because I just could not.
Bailed you out of jail for what? We're not driving past that.
you know, like dumb things that you get involved in
No, I
when
don't know dumb things we get involved in. I've
as a
never been bailed out of
kid,
jail.
you know, sometimes it's shoplifting, you know,
What
sometimes
were you
it's
shoplifting?
fights, and it was never anything that I didn't have at home. It could have been just like a bracelet, cool guy
Or
guy.
something you can afford.
Like kirekile, but I also snuck something into my pocket at the same time. And they're like, they're calling me, I went a robone. You know?
What's the longest you've been behind bars?
Yo, my parents are probably watching this.
Yeah, that's the point. This is an intervention.
You know, first, sometimes I was behind bars and my parents just thought I was staying at a friend's place for 2 weeks. You know, because we had issues growing up. You know, sometimes I'd be gone to go perform and my father would say, oh, you need to come home now. And I'm like, no, I can't perform, you know, like, you know, I had a cousin at the time who was a marketing manager for, you know, one of the alcohol companies. And Usher was coming out here to perform and they had me doing some stuff, some activations there. I was opening up for some guys. Big opportunity. And I was at one of these shows and my father's like, yo, okay, you know, come home now, you know, and I'm like, yo, I can't come home. You know, and he's like, if you don't come home now, you better not come home.
Yeah.
So a lot of times I'm sleeping on homies' couches. I'm sleeping at Buntle's mother's place, which my father hated. He's like, you know, how are they gonna respect you? You know, how's your girl gonna respect you when you're sleeping at a mother's house, you know? But they don't know, like a lot of those times I was behind bars, you know.
And how was it behind bars?
You know, you just need to...
Like the 2 weeks you're behind bars, what had you done?
You're eating terrible food, one. Ojamato, ojari juice, you know. And I was in a 15-man cell at some point, and the toilet is right in the middle.
Yeah, you take your shit in front of everyone.
Exactly. It's right in front of everybody. And the first, there was a Khrupman there. I still remember him. He's deceased now. His name is Jackie Mamba. And Jackie, I give it to that. He's like, hello, na. You know? Alekaki. Because we're not going to sit here in your shit.
And smell your shit. Yeah.
We're not going to do that. Kamo di kobo dianka. You know, like Huangka. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But you're hungry, yeah. And like the food that they making you eat is inducing you having to go to the toilet. I swear, first, you know, for the first 5 days that I'm there, I'm not using the toilet at all. You're really sleeping with one eye open, you know. But you're there with illegal foreigners. You're there with hijackers. You're there with murderers. But I'm just a lighty, you know, and they can see I'm a lighty, you know. But for whatever reason, man, I got to thank God, you know, in all these situations that I've been in, like, I was always protected.
Yeah.
Never once was I molested or never once did I have to do something that I don't want to do never necessarily, you know. No, never, never. And if I,
anyone ever take a fight for you because of protecting you? Yeah.
100%, you know. And there's certain favors that I had to pay back as well when I got out. I had to go and reach out to the Khortman's younger brother in Nur Khasikh. I had to go and continuously come back to the jail to bring Wawana, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I also had cousins who've been in and out of jail, you know what I'm saying? I had an uncle who did heists. And you need to understand that, like, when you have a parent who went into exile, a lot of them come back into the country and haven't received formal training.
Yes.
And they're sitting there and they're struggling and they can't take care of their children. They do have weapons. They are trained.
And skills, yes.
And skills. So a lot of them go into heists, bank robberies, and all these kind of things. And I'm growing up in the East Rand. So the East Rand is rife with that kind of thing, you know? And I can just say that, like, I was just protected by God, you know. That a lot of the times, what made me say I can't be in this situation again, was not wanting to disappoint Buntle. I met Buntle as a 16-year-old boy.
Oh yes, yeah.
Many times she's had to come and bail me out.
Oh wow.
As well,
and she still hung around.
Imagine
that.
These are things that no one has ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
thanks for trusting us with.
Yeah. Now you're the big dog, you know. I grew up watching you, so it's like. Yeah. But this is the truth, you know, because like we live in an area in a country. Like last year, I had to like defend myself because someone said to me, you know, Pretty Ugly glorifies a lot of gangsterism in his music, and I think I made a tweet about like. Man, not every gangster you know is scar-faced and looks like a criminal.
Mm.
The school teacher can be a gangster.
Yes.
The policeman, the politician,
mm.
the daima who's there to take his child to school every day.
Yeah.
Like, hasebe, like, you see the house is taken care of.
Mm.
He's watering the grass every single day. But you don't ask questions. How do they live? But every couple of months, he's switching his cars. You know what I'm saying? But he's also protecting us in the neighborhood.
Yes.
So you either become a victim of your circumstance, or you grow up, like the example that I give is this: you grow up with your father beating your mother, and you grow up to be a wife beater, or you refrain so far from that thing. You want to be so far removed from that thing that you never touch a woman, you know?
Yes.
And I was the latter, you know? Yeah, I felt like I grew up around a lot of violence. You know, my father was because of the trauma that he dealt with, you know, we'd get into altercations at the mall over parking. And he wouldn't hesitate to take out a weapon, you know? And often it's my mom or me who's being told, "Hey,
Yes.
Dad, please,
now you want to go get the shambok.
please respect me," you know? And shambok and tuinya. It's like I'm talking about heavy artillery, you know, and I'm holding this as a kid and passing it to my daima and seeing him pistol whip somebody. Yo, please forgive me, daima. I'm saying this thing so that people can also understand
That was
the
that.
story. This is this, that was then, this is now, you know.
How is your relationship right now, Lele Taima?
No, we're good now, you know. It was troubled.
Does he feel it was worth it sleeping at Bunja's couch?
Yeah, I think now he looks at me, man, and he's proud, you know. But if I'm really honest with you, big dog, it's like even my life, career-wise, it really only changed like 2, 3 years ago. So in between all of that, I'm still proving myself to my parents, you know. Maybe 2 years ago, they sat down with me in a meeting and were just like, "Ish." But I think maybe CV. Let's see where we can, you know. I got, you know, my dad was speaking. He's like, "Yo, man, where I used to spawn, he's a pensioner now. You know, I can try find you something, you know." And I was the one who was just like, "Yo, just it's gonna work
I
out.
got this.
It's just gonna take time, and I need you guys to trust me, you know." And I know a lot of times it just wasn't, you know.
At a self-esteem level, your woman, future wife's career is flying. Yours is not. What are the conversations you're having in the marriage or the relationship?
Man, it's so great because, me and her met each other as just teenagers.
Yes. In fact, you both look like boys at the time.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, I met Bunta and she was a tomboy, you know? She didn't understand why I was into her.
Yes.
Also, at the time, bro, I have a lot of girls who like me, you know, I'm like the ladies' man. And but I was never really interested in all that. Like, there was just something about Bunta I just thought was special.
It's an energy.
It's definitely an energy thing.
Sometimes the energy grabs your heart before any aesthetic.
100%.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And often the sexiness of the energy is all you need
Sure.
to make up your mind.
100%,
Yeah.
you know? And she lost her father when she was six. Her father
Yes.
committed suicide. And that's something I learned obviously later on. And then there's certain decisions I saw her making in life where I was like, I can see that you're making those decisions because you haven't had a present father figure in your life, a male figure rather.
Yes.
And at that time, like I wanted to be that male figure. Not to say that I wanted to be a father, but I felt like she needed a brother
Yes.
to keep away from all these the nohate, you know? And I just wanted to be that guy. I just wanted to
Yes.
protect her. Like, yo, whatever your dreams are, like, I'm gonna be there to make sure you achieve all your dreams.
And in between that, Arjaev.
You know what I'm saying? And she was that for me, you
Yes.
know, where I'm, you know, I can't come home some days and I'm just like, things are not really working out for me and I just want to be a rapper. She was there, you know. I'm accompanying her to every event. She's accompanying me to every single event. So on our come up, you know, I would say that I was actually slightly popular. I was more popular because I already had sports fame, yeah, and a high school fame. Yeah, and she didn't understand like why I was into her. And I'm like, no, go ahead, you know.
When the girls are throwing themselves at you.
Exactly, right? And then we go into our relationship, you know, a few more years into it, and she's a tertiary student, and then you know, she's done with tertiary. When she's done with tertiary, I'm only then starting tertiary. And then, you know, and then she's not sure what she wants to do after tertiary, but she knows she wants to dance, but she feels like her mom is not going to support her in this thing. And I'm saying, you're going to dance.
Yeah.
We're going to figure out how we're going to make it happen.
Yeah.
But you're going to dance.
Sure.
And then she starts climbing, and then I'm slightly behind, you know? So I feel like in our 16 years together, it's never been like one-sided where like one person's career is completely up here and then the other one isn't.
Seasons.
It was always seasonal, you know, where when I'm up, I'm lifting her up. When she's up, she's lifting me up, you know. Obviously, yes, then she received this whole, you know, this huge public persona. Now she's, you know, now we have TikTok and social media. She has millions of followers and that kind of thing.
And
you know?
She's transformed from the tomboy into the swan.
Exactly. Now she's blossoming. Yeah. Now everybody wants her. Now I'm dealing with politicians wanting her, billionaires wanting
her. It's the wildest shit when people jump into your woman's DMs.
Yeah.
It's right? The wildest shit.
And
I can show you screenshots. No, actually, no.
Yeah,
I won't.
Then I can show you screenshots. And I think, and that's
the wildest shit.
And that's what made it, you know, just so easy for me and her, is that, like, you know, we were really each other's best friends.
Yes.
You know? So, like, even when these guys are in their DM, she's like, yo, Bona,
yes.
Look who's saying what.
And you should be able to laugh about shit like that in your relationship. It should never be something they need to hide from.
For sure.
You know what I mean?
100%.
And often as Majid, our self-esteem or our ego... Yeah. Get in so much in the way that eventually shit is kept away from you.
100%.
When we could actually turn this into our thing. 100%. Where we even have a going through DMs session where we have a nice good
exactly. Rate. Just looking at all these people that are in the DMs, you know?
But you need to create that environment.
100%.
And sadly, a lot of us in our relationships don't have that environment.
Exactly. So I think that's one thing we've allowed for each other in our relationship. We're best friends, bro, and we're mentors to each other, and we're confidants at the same time, and we practically raised each other at the same time as well, you know.
Yeah.
So we never had to deal with yo, you bigger than me or whatever. No,
it's just, we are building.
It's like we're building this thing, you know. Today we have two kids, married 6 years, going on 7 years, been together 16 plus years, it's just like it's not. We don't think about it anymore. It just naturally happens. And I just want to say this again, Kimudimu.
Yes.
You know, like, we remove pride from our relationship. It's never been about money.
Yeah.
It's never been about career. In fact, me and B, we're homebodies. We love each other. We love our family. And we've never been fazed by, like, the exterior world, you know?
Yeah. Or perceptions.
And the perception of what all the societal pressures of what a man should be and what a man isn't. Also, and I can also thank, you know, like, there are weird blessings that happen in life. Like, I'll say this, maybe it might sound weird, I hope I can say in the right way, because Wintle grew up without her father there, she never had any preconceived notions of what a man needs to be in the house. So I never had to deal with indoda, you know what I'm saying? So she never put me under that pressure. But I can also thank my parents in that regard. Like with me saying, my parents were like very hard. My father was very hard. My father always welcomed my girlfriends into the home. In fact, my father would much rather me be in the house with my girlfriend
than on the street.
Than be in the streets.
That's my attitude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that just that. So knowing that I was trusted that much with my girl, I couldn't mess up.
Just don't sleep at her place.
Yeah. Well, when I, you know. I just couldn't mess up, because I didn't want to disappoint her. I didn't want to disappoint my father. I didn't want to disappoint the sisters.
Sure.
You know, it is really like a family thing, you know. So because of that, like I said, like, she never put any pressure on me as to like what a man needs to do and what a man shouldn't be. And because I had such a present father, you know, negative or positive, there were certain things that I could take from my father into our relationship and be like, yo, this actually helped me be the person I am. All these things, these traits we don't need. Let's remove these traits, you know? And King, and here we are, you know?
Father of two.
Yes, sir.
What's in a name? In fact, before we talk about the name,
sure.
You had the good fortune of naming your baby sister Tumi. And she used to follow you all over the place. Let's talk about your relationship with Tumi.
Wow.
And why did you name her Tumi?
Yo, that's crazy.
I know everything.
Yeah, my sister's 6 years younger than me.
Yeah. So you're 6 year old. There's a baby on the way, and they say name your sister, and you go to me. Why to me?
Look, it was pressure because I had a cousin, my favorite cousin at the time, Nelemwe Teki.
Oh yes.
She's named after my grandfather, my grandmother. Sorry. And they had named her little brother Dumi, but Nele Dumeleng.
Yes.
And because I just love my cousin so much, when my parents are having a baby, I'm like, no, it's going to be Dumi also. And my dad was like, no, but look, we already have a Dumi. And he's like, nah, keep Dumi. And my dad's like, no, but like Dumi is short for something, you know, Gibui Dume, you know.
Or Dumeleng, something.
You know, or something, you know. So she needs to have a bigger name, you know. And I was just like, no, she's going to bring joy into this family, you know. Because at the time, like I was saying, you know, we are, it's a troubled time in my parents' lives. You know what I'm saying? And it's I just felt like,
how?
You know, my parents are having marital issues.
Yeah.
We had just moved from Soweto to the suburbs. Mm. My father's finding himself and, you know, dealing with whatever pressures he's
doing. So there was no peace at the time. You know?
Yeah, so there wasn't a lot of peace. And I just felt like my sister was like, was the glue that was going to bring the family together, you know? Mm. Or the joy, at least,
yes,
you know?
Yes.
I grew up, my father's nickname for me is Angry Face, you know, because I didn't smile in pictures.
Yeah.
I didn't smile at all. I was always angry. I'm the angry child.
You were a born rapper, basically.
Yeah. Okay, you know, I'm really like the angry, and I'm in the East Rand. So, yes. Like, you get taught that, like, yo, you can't show too much friendliness, you know. If you're too friendly, you know, they take you for an eye, you know. So you need to be hard at all times. In fact, Buntle softened me up, you know. So my sister felt like at that time was the joy in the family. So Gibu Itume, you know, she's like.
But she used to follow you all over the place.
Everywhere. I went to Star and You Kids Awards. I had to be with my sister.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't go see a girlfriend.
Yeah.
And
Dumi's there.
And not be with Dumi. My dad made sure, like, you take your sister with you everywhere you go.
Yeah.
Now, I don't mind, you can go. But if you're not going to take your sister, then you're also going to stay at home.
Yeah.
You know, which goes back to the same thing I would like. If your sister's shoes are dirty, you're getting a hiding, my dog. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it also made me resent my sister a little bit as a youngin.
Yeah, because all block.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But it also gave us the strongest relationship. You know, she, I feel like a big part of who I am is because of my sister. She always believed in me.
Mm.
And I felt like the pressures on her because of me were so hard because, you know, I excelled really well in everything I did, sports and everything, you know? So then my sister then would do netball. Maybe she's not on the first team. And now she's giving up on her netball career because, like, people are saying, yeah, but you're not as athletic as your brother is.
Yes.
And I think because I saw her give up on so many of her things, you know, like, even, like, I remember my sister being, like, a 12-year-old and spinning some raps for me. And they were so good.
Yeah.
But for her, it's like she lived in my shadow so much.
Yes.
That she, like, I can't do it because you're my brother. It even affected her getting into employment now as an adult, where she couldn't take certain jobs because she feels like, I can't work there because I'm pretty ugly sister.
Mm.
I'm like, bro,
let's jump in, man.
Do it. Mm. You know what I'm saying? It's like, no, but what you're saying, like, I'm pretty ugly sister, but I'm here serving the kota kaika or whatever the case is, you know? So because of her, I've always felt like, because I need to be there to protect her, I can't fail in anything I do.
Mm. How's your relationship now?
I mean, you know, since getting married, I don't spend as much time with her as I would love to. Mm. I was with her this past weekend and I hadn't hung around her in years.
What did you guys talk about?
Man, life, you know, her boyfriends, boyfriend.
I was going to say, at the same time, or...
Yeah, but we've had that kind of relationship, you know, where, like, you know, when she was a teenager and she's getting into that stage where boys are in her life and she tells me, I'm the first person to find out that this happened to her,
sure,
that happened, you know? Mm. I won't speak too much about it here, but she's, man, the love of my life, man. She's just a sweetheart, you know? She's also grown up ill. I don't really want to speak about, because she doesn't speak about it much. I don't really want to bring it out here, you know, but she was diagnosed with a chronic illness when she was 5 years old.
Jeez, bro.
that we've had to navigate our whole lives, you know. It's also kind of what it kept me healthy growing up, because to help her deal with her health issues, we just all in the family
must fall in. We must all fall in.
Adapt her diet and that kind of thing, you know. Yeah, man, and she's just like a beautiful young lady. People, when you see her, like you see me.
So shout out to me.
Yeah, shout out to me, man.
And please, if we meet one day, please rap for me.
Come on, let's do me, man. Like, she has just so much potential, man. I just, you know, sometimes I just, you just really need to pull it out of her, you know? Yeah.
You were born with 11 fingers.
I was, yeah.
And apparently people with 11 fingers are spiritually gifted. Are you spiritually gifted?
You know, King, you know, but a magician never reveals their tricks.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't think it's something that I want to speak on openly.
Yeah.
But if you're close to me in my life, I think you know what my gifts are, and I think that's and at least it's a big part of what I was speaking about when I say that, like, my whole life I've been protected.
Yeah.
I've been in situations that people don't make it out of.
Yes.
And I came out fine, you know, like a phoenix rising, you know.
I often tell the story of how my mom, when we talk about my childhood, often says she doesn't know how I survived half of the naughty shit we did as kids.
Yeah.
We were kids just having fun.
Sure.
But some of that shit, I should have been mauled to death by a dog.
Yeah.
Or I should have flipped the car when I was 12 that I went for a joyride in. But for some reason, the good Lord was like, I'm not done with you.
I'm telling you.
And there are many incidences where I feel it.
I feel it every day. Yeah. I'll give you one example, man. It might be a loose example, but like me and Buntle were hijacked in 2015, June 16,
2015. Where were you?
We're in Kempton Park.
Yeah.
And it was one of the nights where my father was like, yo, man, let Buntle sleep over tonight. Mm. You'll take her home, Kasa. And I'm like, nah, I need to take her home now. We haven't spoken to her mom. Mm. The whole thing. Let me take her home. My dad's like, Ashkibusiu, guys. I don't think you need to, you know, and I fought it or whatever. And he's like, okay, no, take my car. Inke. You know, he had just gotten an Astra at the time and I was using a gray in the tertiary and that kind of thing. And long story cut short, me and Buntla are driving out. We stop at a garage in the area and we have a Golf 4 that pop. I just remember the car, the whole scenario, you know. Golf 4, chrome rims, the gold car, parks right in front of us, you know. But in the town, I'm like, you know, it wasn't hasty. It was very slow. So I'm thinking, it's one of my friends. Ish, who is it? You know, I've also stopped the car. How can the gents while in blocker, you know? Before I knew it, you know, four guys came out the car. You know, Buntle sees it before I even see it. I'm still trying to figure out, like, I'm still admiring the car, trying to figure out, like, which one of my friends drives a Golf 4 going, you know? Buntle immediately starts praying. Yeah. It's like, oh no. I'm like, only when they're knocking on the window, I'm like, damn.
Fuck, here we go.
There's no end. And I just cooperated, you know. You know, they're dragging me out the car. They're beating me up, whatever. But they keep beating me up because I keep insisting, like, guys, please don't touch the girl. I'm not so jealous. I went, hey, you know. It's a whole thing. But the reason why I'm mentioning this is that the guys pull out guns. They pistol whip me a little bit, you know. They search us or whatever. They get into the car. But the car, there was, you know, when these cars were a bit new, like doesn't have a handbrake, it had a finger brake.
Oh, yes, yes.
So now the guy can't, like, move the car, you know. So I'm leaning over his lap while he's in the driver's seat, out the driver's car door. And I'm trying to show him what to do. Okay, no, hata clutch, da, and then, okay, release the
finger brake. Cooperative, you know, hijacking.
I'll be cooperating. Yo, and I'm, you know, they're busy clapping me, like, hey, man, inzalento lela, you know. My gents, please just leave the girl alone. I can hear Buntle praying in the passenger seat. You know, there's other guys there by her. Eventually, like, we get out the car. Oh, you know, yeah, they let Buntle out the car. They leave me there, hit, you know, pistol whip me a little bit. And they get in the car and they drive off. And then as they're driving off, one guy stops and he comes out the car. And he has a trigger right in my face, you know. And I just remember just, like, covering Buntle, and I was just like, I'm like, Lord, this is where I'm gonna go, you know? Before I knew it, you know, the car's driving off, It's like, okay, cool. But now we're somewhere in Birch Acres, a couple of kilometers away from my parents' house. And it's just me and Buntle. But now we're scared. I'm like, yo, what if they come back? Mm. So what are we going to do, you know? By the time it took us like 25 minutes, 35 minutes to walk back to my parents' crib. You know, when I'm getting there, I'm pressing the bell.
What are you guys talking about as you're walking home after this ordeal?
It's weird. It's a mixture of like laughter. It's a mixture of tears. Like, yo, how do we survive that? Like, yo, this is crazy. But also fear. Like, yo, they could come back at any moment. What do I tell my parents now? My
dad. Because dad said don't go.
My dad told me don't go. Mm. You know what I'm saying? And he just gave me one of his special cars that he just got from my mom. And like, and I wasn't even supposed to take that car. He told me which car I should take. I'm the one that stole the keys for the other car, yeah. You know? Because it's got Bluetooth and whatever, you know? And I get to the house and we're pressing the button. My mom comes and opens. She's like, what's happening? I'm like, no, we just got hijacked. Okay, they tell us to come inside the house. As we get in, my dad gets a call, you know? He takes a call. They're like, yo, Datemului, were you involved in a car accident or whatever? My dad's like, no, my son just got hijacked. They're like, are you sure you went in a car accident? He's like, no. They're like, no, because your car is here. We just found your car here. You know, he's like, okay, cool. We drive to it. It's literally like 5 minutes away from where I stay. These guys are driving. They see police coming. The police weren't even coming after them. They panicked and they crashed into someone's palisade.
Yeah.
Guns, fingerprints were left there. Long story cut short, insurance pays out. The car's written off. We get a better car. I later on go and shoot a video with it. It's called Cocaine Ghosts. I'm driving around in a BMW, a white BMW. But me mentioning that is just to say that, like, even in a situation where we're getting hijacked and someone is supposed to be leaving with the car, like, they never succeeded. You know, in fact, it was a bad situation. But my life only improved from that thing. I got a better car. I got better trust from my family now because they almost lost me. Now they're a little more lenient on me.
Yes,
a big part of it was Buntle's prayers.
Mm.
And another part of it was just, I got a tattoo on my chest that says, blessed to be a blessing.
Sure.
Is that I've always been blessed, man, in any situation that I come in. Even the bad ones that you're not really supposed to come back from, you know? Like, not even physically. I'm just talking about emotionally, like an embarrassing moment or whatever. I stand tall in every single situation, yeah.
Speaking of your chest, you're born with four nipples.
No, so I wasn't born with four nipples, but I developed the other two.
That's what I'm saying, but you're rolling with four nipples right
now.
So
six fingers, four nipples.
Four nipples.
Yeah.
So what happens during sex? Like, does she say, pick two nipples, baby?
Hey,
or are you on some, baby, I need all four nipples to be touched today.
Hey, man, I've always just felt like I'm an alien, like, genuinely. Yeah. I've never really been, like, the people that I grew up around, you know? So it's like, I think those are parts of my magic, my spiritual gifts. Like, yo, man, I got six fingers, four nipples.
Well, no one asked you anything else.
You know, I don't want to reveal too much. There might be something else that I don't want to mention. You know,
that's why we don't want to.
You know, maybe it's what made Buntle like maybe Korobelayaka. What's kept me there with her. You know, all these 16 years. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Every man and more.
He's two men.
You know what I'm saying? But yeah, the other two are I can feel them. They're not very sensitive. But because I have a whole chest tattoo now, you don't really see the second ones or the other two as much. But yeah, they're there still. Yeah, it developed. You know, when you 12 back in the day, we used to call it bed.
Yeah.
Is when you're going through puberty.
Oh, yes.
So you know your nipples get like a bit harder. Mm. You start to grow pubic hair or whatever. So when all of that stuff was happening with me, I grew two extra nipples. Mm. I don't know how. I don't know what the science of it is. I ask no questions. Like I said, for me, it's part of my magic.
You know, medically, it could be that maybe you were meant to be twins and the other one didn't develop.
You know, what's interesting when you mention that is that mine and Buntle's two pregnancies started off as twin pregnancies. Daughter Africa.
I rest my case.
Yeah.
I think you were a twin, just the other one never developed.
That makes so much sense.
That's what I think. I'm not a doctor, but I use my mind and my brain sometimes.
I can believe that. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I might need to ask.
And the fact that you guys were meant to have twins means clearly who are little tweeny.
On two occasions, yeah.
On two occasions.
Yeah.
Can we talk about
that? Yeah, for sure, for sure. Like,
so when did you realize we were carrying two?
So before we had my first daughter, Africa, Bunta experienced three miscarriages.
Mm.
And all three times we never knew she was pregnant.
Okay.
Only when going to the hospital, are we told an emergency case is like, yo, guys, it's right now, it's either the mother of the child or the babies. But like the mother of the child is not going to survive if we do not terminate this pregnancy. Mm. And I remember us being at Arvape Hospital in Kempton Park. This is 2018. And I'm with Ambitious Entertainment at the time. I'd just gone to go do an interview on YoTV. And I'm being called by my parents to say, and we rush into the hospital. She's been complaining about a stomach cramp. She had been complaining about it for like some days.
And a miscarriage is a lot of pain.
It's a lot, you know? So she gets there and they're like, okay, we need to operate, you know? And in that time when they're saying, you need to operate, she went into the bathroom and she went to the toilet and she said, you know, there was a big clot that came out. So I guess that was the baby, you know. Obviously, we stayed in the hospital. They cleaned her up. And that happened again the following year and the year after that.
You know? How are you guys dealing with all this loss? Because it's loss after loss after loss.
I mean, for us, it's fear because we weren't expecting to be pregnant. Mm. So it's like we're only finding out now when you're losing the child. Oh, okay. This is what's happening. Oh, what are our parents going to say? Like, oh, are we ready for children? You know, I just got out of tertiary. I'm trying to make it as a rapper.
Can't you pull out, my son?
It's fear. It's fear more than anything. But I'm fearing for Bunta's life.
Yes.
And in those scenarios, like I would rather save her than anything else. You know. So when we had our firstborn, Africa, and we found out that Bunta was pregnant, you know, we weren't too excited in the beginning. But the excitement came from, the lack of excitement came from, we've been here before.
Here we go again, yeah.
Oh, man, this is, you know. So kind of every week that we're making it, this is like.
Yeah, because you have to wait for that first trimester at least.
Exactly. Until then,
it's touch and go.
So 11, 13 weeks in, we're going to go check the embryo out. And there's two.
Oh, wow.
There's two eggs that you can see there on the ultrasound, you know. And the doctor's telling us, oh, wow, okay. It seems like you guys are having twins.
Oh, wow.
Jeez, twins. Okay, that's crazy. And then maybe when you come in for our 16-week checkup, the other embryo kind of just dissolves.
Oh, wow.
And then, you know, we have that pregnancy. We have our daughter, healthy, beautiful baby girl. And now with the second pregnancy, you know, that we announced this year in March, started off as a twin pregnancy as well.
Oh, wow.
And then also, like, in the 16th week, the other one kind of disappears, you know? And when you're looking at the ultrasound, it is just like the doctor does say that, this one doesn't seem to be developing. So at the time, you're also afraid, like, are we going to have a disabled child? Mm. What's happening? You know, and then it just disappears, you know? And obviously, the doctor gives medication to make sure, okay, we need to clear that clot because over time, it can affect this main embryo, you know? But, you know, thank God, you know, here we are, you know, two healthy children. I don't think we've mentioned that, you know, we just got our second baby recently, healthy, beautiful.
What's his name?
Wow, fresh. Fresh is the guy. This is where it comes out.
This is where we're here.
We named him after my father.
Kilabone. Okay, light.
Light.
Yeah.
Kgosi.
Yes. King.
King, of course. Kgosi Lebone Tiago. The full name for Tiago is Santiago. My mother's name is Santa Maria.
Ah, yes.
So he kind of has like my mother's surname in Santiago and my father's name in Lebone. Remita Kgosi, I call him Lebone. I feel like he looks just like my father. You know, like little light-skinned baby. Cute, man. It's just like, I see me, but like I'm a lot like my father. You know, my father's like, very light-skinned man, I'll say. So my baby looks, I see more of my father in him. But yeah, it was a blessing, man. Like, we thank God every day. You know, because in the family, you know, we're even currently we're dealing with, you know, family members who just had children who have been in hospital the last 2 months. One of my cousin Tokas gave birth to a stillborn not too long ago. She also sadly passed away shortly afterwards, you know. But that's just to say that we don't take this life for granted, you know. Absolutely. It's an absolute blessing to have a healthy child. Granted, now our responsibility is to keep these people alive.
Yes,
you know, until they're able to take care of themselves, you know. But it's such a beautiful blessing, King.
Had Lebone been a girl, let me guess, you were gonna try again.
You. Yeah, man, I really wanted a boy, you know, this time around. Yeah, just for the balance of balance, it, you know. Man. So I think now we've got like a nice balance, and I mean, if God decides to bless us with another child, then you know, we're all for it.
Mm. Was Lebone intentional, or was it an oopsie?
No, it Lebone was actually very, very intentional. Mm. You know. With him it was more planned, you know. She kind of mentioned that, okay, at this age
Philip is here, Kinako.
You know, I wanna have a child at this age, and I think if we conceive at around this time, then he should be here like July next year. And it worked out exactly like how we planned it, actually, you know, I guess God's plan. He definitely was planned. Yeah, and Butler's such a great mom as well, a superstar. And we're blessed, you know. We spent a lot of this year at home. We've been able to be home and not have to stress about every single gig and taking every show.
That alone is a privilege.
It's such a privilege, you know. I've been doing this since I was 13 years old, and I see my peers downgrading and. Losing homes and cars.
Going back home.
And bro. Going back home. It happens all the time.
Yeah.
So the fact that...
I'm seeing that bloodbath in the DJ community.
Oh, yeah.
Where guys that used to be full-time career DJs are going back to a 9-to-5 or going back home. Or even saying, listen, dude, I don't have anything to eat this week. Yeah. Can you help me? It's gotten that bad. It's almost as bad as during COVID.
It really is.
It actually is. And I'm seeing it across the board.
It's across
not just in entertainment. That people are going through.
People are really going through it. So hence when before we even started the interview, I was like, man, I cannot complain. There's a lot that I can't complain about.
Mm.
But like, I'll be doing God such a disservice.
This is a middle finger to God.
Exactly. It's like the amount of gratitude I'm surrounded by and that I have just like spewing inside of me is like... Man, I cannot be upset.
Yeah,
and I'm dealing with lawyers in the background. Life happens, you know.
What lawyers?
Entertainment lawyers.
Sorry, you must never say anything to me because you're
asking. Because the people that I'm coming for, I'm coming for them.
Okay.
But it's, music, entertainment.
Yeah, but you have a strong case.
Related stuff. Yeah, very, very strong case. Yeah. You know, very, very strong case. People saw me mention that I'm retiring a couple of years ago. And I never said I was retiring. I just said it was the last Pretty Ugly album.
Yes.
I just felt like people don't understand how much goes into an album.
Mm.
How much, and I've been a album-based artist. Absolutely. I've never been...
Drop a couple of singles.
Exactly. I never had big radio singles, that kind of thing. Like, you need to listen to my body of work to really understand my true story and my true essence. I've never had big mainstream huge success, and that's never been my niche as well, you know.
But you have your tribe though.
I definitely do, and they're taking care of me, you know. I mean, my last album is titled Dust that we dropped at the beginning of 2024, and you know, we're sitting on millions of streams. You know, I got my first platinum plaque from that, my first gold plaque.
How did those feel?
They felt really, really good, Kim. Yeah. But like, if I'm really honest with you, like, they feel good, but I think for me, it's good for the people who support me.
Yes,
it's validation for y'all, because I never cared for that kind of stuff. You know, because I've been doing this such a long time. I've been to to, you know, my OGs who've been in the game in their homes, and I've seen their samas and their plaques, and then a lot of them, those plaques can't pay your bills.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, plaque thing about the my OG struggling.
There's nothing else to show.
There's nothing else, you know. So it's like that was never, I never strived for that kind of thing. But now that I do have it, I like the fact that I have it because, you know, because we live in such a superficial world now where, you know, when my fans fight for me and they're like, no, Pretty Ugly is the best. People are like, oh, but his numbers don't say he's the best.
Yeah.
Oh, where's his plaques?
Yeah.
Oh, where's the money? Oh, where's the Bentley?
Because we make everything about the quantity and not the quality.
Exactly, you know? But now I do have that stuff. Now I have the plaques and I have the millions of streams. And
the hot wife.
And the hot wife, you know? And I don't want to say it doesn't mean anything, but it's like, that's not the driving force behind my purpose, you know? It's great to have. Like, you can come into my home and be inspired when you see that kind of stuff. Like, my nephews and nieces can look at it and be like, yo, you know?
I always say some of these things are just nice to have. It's like having big balls. How do you get any of these things?
Yeah.
So it's nice. We're happy for you have big balls, but because you know what I mean? So and sometimes we make noise about the things that in the bigger scheme of things, they're just about public perception.
100%.
They don't necessarily feed your soul. And yes, it's nice to be recognized and to say I've got X amount of streams and plaques and everything else, but are you fulfilled?
Exactly.
Is your cup full? Is your soul fed?
100%.
You know what I mean? When you sleep at night, are you at peace?
Are you at peace?
And not for me, peace is the ultimate. I just want
peace. Growing up now, it's like peace of mind is my ultimate, ultimate thing. You know, sometimes even more than chile thing. Because I'm around people who have money and they have no peace of mind, you know? Yeah. I'm around people who are feared.
Yeah.
And they have no peace of mind. They're constantly looking over their shoulders. It's not peaceful. And it's like, I don't want that. It's like, I've spoken about this. I mentioned it to Bontle more and like my close friends. Like, I also like my level of fame, if I can call it that. Because it still allows me to walk into a mall. Yes. And I can still go into the mall. Yes, like I might deal with some pictures here and there, but it's not to a point where like some of these guys, they can't go to a mall. They can't take their kids to go to the city. They can't go to the cinema. You can't go to the spa, you know? And I like that. I like walking my dog. It still allows me to be able to walk my dog in peace and be the guy, you know, in the neighborhood. The people know me, you know, the neighborhood kids like, yo, that's pretty. Like you can always see him every 2 days outside washing his cars. I'm a big car guy. I like the things that give me peace. Being able to be there to fetch my daughter from school every single day for me is like a blessing. It's like for other people who be like, oh, you know, there's a lot of hip hop artists who are like stay at home dads or whatever. It's like yes, I've built a life where it allows me to stay at home.
Yes,
my studio's at home. Everything I need is at home. Actually. My peace of mind is at home. The people that I love are at home. Other people don't have homes, you know, and I love it. And that's not me saying that I don't want more. I definitely do want more. And I feel like I've only scratched the surface of like where we're going with my career and our union.
Sure.
You know?
In fact, speaking of scratching the surface, I mean, that's one of the reasons we have you here.
Sure.
That a lot of people know a lot and have a lot to say about your career. Yeah. But I've never known your foundation. And for me, it's important to know your foundation, to know your influences, to know that you have four nipples, although it means nothing because, again, unless you're in a threesome, four nipples are useless.
They are useless, really. They really are useless. They just caused me more pain when I was getting a tattoo, really.
But we're going to do a part two where we will talk about the game, we'll talk about the industry, we'll talk about everything else. For me, it was important, like I said, to get to the core of the man before we talk about everything else the man does. Many people don't know that you draw, so well.
Wow.
A lot of the shit he draws is, you have no idea, guys. Let's talk about it since we're here, because you didn't think I knew. Like, dude draws like a motherfucker.
Yeah. A lot of my album covers were designed by me.
Yeah.
And maybe then digitalized by somebody else, but I hand drew everything. A lot of the merchandise on the clothes that I wear, I'm drawing them out, you know? It is an art form of mine that I've slept on
Yes.
that I would definitely like to dabble into some more. And I think having children actually is what has gotten me back into it. My daughter loves to draw and paint, and we're going to art jamming in Melrose now.
Yes.
Where a couple of months ago, like I held up, like I always sketched, I never painted.
Mm.
I held a paintbrush for the first time in my life, and just the therapy that it brought. So it like just let me know that like there's just so much. Pretty ugly as an artist.
Mm.
And that's why I don't like just calling myself a rapper. Yes, I do rap, but I don't just rap.
Mm.
I do a lot. Everything that I embody right now is like I'm curating it, designing it. People can see me wearing green wherever I go. My album cover is green. If you go look at my Instagram for the last year, I've worn green. There's been an item of green in everything I wear.
Yeah.
Whether it's in my jewelry or in my tooth or, you know. And for me, that just symbolizes life. And emerald is one of my favorite stones. And I think it's a little bit of my source of power as
sure.
well.
I can see the green.
Do I want to learn? I want to. It's on the watch face. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, growing up, I'd love to do things like what Dr. Esther Mahlangu does, you know. I'd love to paint a Bima.
In fact, speaking of painting in Melrose,
yeah.
I mean, just to show you the therapy that is painting. Even in our separation, myself and Taviso went painting just as part of our healing together.
Really?
Yeah. And painting does that. It's just it's an incredible outlet.
Wow, King, thank you for sharing that.
So yeah, man. Let's talk about Sidiso.
Oh. Almost teared there. Damn, brother.
Sidiso has been a massive influence on your life.
What?
Let's talk about Sidiso.
Jeez.
This is my final question, then I'll let you go.
Sidiso's in jail currently.
Mm.
He'll be released soon.
Why does talking about Sidiso bring tears to your eyes?
Man, so much of my music is about him. I feel like a big part of who I am was trying to live up to the things that Sidiso couldn't.
Mm.
He was the first person in my family that I know of who was in studio and who was scouted by big record labels. You know, at the time, he's just a kid in Tembisa. Soweto, Meadowlands, Dobsonville. He's coming home with demos and I'm listening to his Kwaito music, you know. Sidiso was in shape, you know. People know him as Mashobane, like Kokasi, like he's that guy, you know, always clean, watch Iowa, he knows how to dance, he knows how to play soccer, good looking guy, clean, you know,
what went wrong?
A product of, a victim of his environment, I guess, you know, and it's also that pressure, you know, my uncles had taken Sidiso out of the hood and taken him to the school in Princess High in the suburbs, Koroliport.
No, I know Princess High. Myself and Tato did a school visit at Princess High in 2003.
So Tiso goes there, you know, but he's a kid growing up in Soweto. But he's coming back, Kokasi, and like, I guess he's dealing with those complexes. You think you're better than all of us. So I think he also felt like he had to prove to the people he was around that, no, he was just as gangster.
I'm still cast.
And just as street, you know. So he's getting to stuff at school and they're doing criminal activity, Koskolong and Kohai. And he's kind of lived like the last couple of years of his life in and out of jail.
Mm.
Yeah, it brings me sadness also because I've never gone to see him in jail.
Mm. How long has he been in?
I mean, on and off now for the last 15 years.
Mm. And why haven't you gone to see him?
He came out ka 2019. Mm. He was there for my wedding.
Mm.
And it's a weird one. It's a strange one, this one. But I remember when he came out and I remember telling people, yo, my cousin is out. They were like, oh, for how long this time?
Mm.
And granted, a few months after my wedding, he he was back in jail. Because what people don't understand is that, and the reason why I had not gone to go see him is that he doesn't want me to go see him. Because he knows how much...
You look up to him.
I look up to him.
He's your childhood hero.
Exactly. So for him, he's like, I don't want you to see me in this space. You don't have to be here. I don't even want to remind you of the time that you've been in these situations because you're trying to prove a point to the wrong people. No, like, be the family guy, bro. And you don't have to prove to anybody that you are hard or you're a gangster. Smile, Ambinjaga.
Sure.
Smile. Be happy. Don't feel like you need to prove a point to anybody. You know what I'm saying? So, but he will be out this year for sure. I spoke to his mom a couple of weeks ago and she does say that they are releasing him, you know. But the issue with that is that it's never rehabilitation because, you know, you come out of that situation and you get put back into the same hood that put you in jail in the first place. You come out there.
So it's inevitable.
It's inevitable.
Yeah.
You're going back to the same group of friends. You can't get a job. So, you know, you spend a week out, you know, you need some money. And you start doing exactly what put you in jail in the first place. I actually wanted to name my first album City So, and then I never did. Damn, that's so crazy. That's so crazy that you asked me about City So. Yeah, I think about him daily.
I'm here to ask you about shit you've never been asked about.
Oh my goodness.
Like Kovu. Who's Kovu?
No! Damn you, Fresh.
Yes, Mr. Lion King fan.
Yeah, I'm a big Lion King fan, man.
But most people, if you're going to name your dog after a Lion King character, you'd go Simba, you go Mufasa, you and Kovu. Who's Kovu?
We're in Kovu.
And why should we care, dog?
So Kovu's on Lion King 2, and Simba has a daughter named Kiara.
Yes.
And Kiara meets this outsider who's been exiled. And yes. His name is Kovu.
Yes.
He's a descendant Jaskar. And they grow up together and, you know, and they form a relationship. Simba doesn't like him because he's an outsider.
Yes.
Resembles Scar.
Does it remind you of yourself?
Yeah, man. Kovu, yeah. It's just like an outsider. Just the person who needed to prove that he isn't what people think he is. And that he is pure of heart. And and it just reminded me of me. And like, I named my dog. My first dog was named Kovu. Man, and he was in the family for 15 years. And the reason why we actually got rid of Kovu, but the reason why we got rid of him, my father had bought me two pit bull puppies, Tigger and Tatum. And Kovu at the time was just like an old man, you know, like he had been our only dog in the yard. And we just felt like, you know, he was going to attack the small dogs. And he wasn't a very friendly dog, you know. And so to keep the puppies, we took Kovu to the SPCA. The SPCA did let us know that, you know, man, he's an old dog.
Yeah.
We're probably going to have to put him down. No one is going to want to take this dog. And a day after I took Kovu to the SPCA, the one puppy died of parvovirus.
Oh, wow.
And because it's contagious, 2 days after that, the second puppy died. And yeah, but that's our family dog, man. Kovu, we have crazy.
You've loved dogs since childhood.
Yeah, yeah, I have, yeah. I have a dog, even Konayan on Egypt, yeah. My pit bull.
No, not Egypt.
I mean, just yesterday, Malvani, like, you know, my wife was shooting something wherever. And I don't know how they got to mention it, but she mentioned that she has a pit bull. Yeah. And everyone was like, what? Aren't you afraid of your, like, what about your kids? It's like, my daughter's been walking Egypt since she was a year old. I'll even post a video one day. It's like, Egypt is a pit bull, like strong dog. But when my daughter has him on, has her on the leash, like she walks like this.
So basically, it's like you and your wife.
Gentle, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, man. And I feel like dogs also are just like, they embody when as the owner. If you're kind-hearted and peaceful and
if you're fucked in the head, your dog,
your dog's
chances are going to be fucked in the head.
You're a legend.
My dude, we're out of time.
Yeah.
But I think we know more than we need to know right now. We'll bring you back for a part two and we'll talk about where you are now. Because I wanted to know the child first and the boy, the man. Now we're here. We'll bring you back for a part two.
Man, that was therapy for me.
Shout out, my dude.
These are things I've never really spoken about.
I know.
Ever.
Yeah, I know. Crazy. So what are you working on right now?
I got the deluxe version of my album Dust, you know, just to celebrate, you know, the plaques, the gold plaques, the platinum plaques is dropping on the 26th of September. I haven't announced it anyway. So you guys are the first people to know about this. Look out for that. You'll be getting some snippets here and there. We've got a documentary dropping very, very soon. Merchandise. I'm in the custom car industry, you know, so I got a kusheshe. We're building more kusheshes. If you want to build a kusheshe, come to me, hit me up. Whatever you're looking for.
So kusheshe is like a bar now, right?
Yeah.
So if you have a bar, you need a kusheshe.
You need.
That's your man.
Come on, I'm your guy, you know? So yeah, more music for sure. Always more music.
Sure.
Just stay tuned, you know, pretty_ugly across all platforms. Everything will be there.
Final question. Should rappers have to drop a freestyle when done an interview?
Ish. Look, I do it all the time. Yeah, but it also does get boring, you know, because like I've gone to radio platforms where they make you freestyle, but they don't play my music.
You see.
So it's also like, guys.
So you're just content. And you?
Yeah, I get content, the follow. And, you know? But as a rapper, I feel like you should always just have a verse.
So let's. I don't want a verse. I want you to rap to us about your kids and family and your love for dogs.
Yeah. Fresh is asking me to like freestyle.
Or if you've got one hidden somewhere, because many people are arguing as a rapper, you must always have verses hidden that can double as a freestyle, even when they're not.
Yeah. Yeah, daddy took a fixed loan to fix a broken home. His kids made it through pissed, you couldn't cope alone. With a fist, he could hold his own. Busting lips, giving broken bones. With his rib, God molds a clone. You should think before you throw a stone. In a blink, they could blow your dome. Many kings get overthrown, it's easy to blink. You should know the code. Listen, a couple of years ago, they said he'd never blow, and there he goes, he's Osama. Now let it roll, it in every role, plenty episodes of the drama. I'm here to set the tone in any semitone you barely known in the strata. Been really known in plenty homes, very many silly phones to the spazas. Them bars are dripping head to toe. Treat your heavy clothes like pajamas, bombers. Hotter than the summer if you dollar with the gamma. I made your mama Zala and your baby mama Kuala. And ever since I won a summer, Banyana Basadi love me like I'm Java. Wanna show me the number, or wanna show me the tanga, or wanna lamza. You got a gua, you got a brata, fala totitala and the kala. I'm trying to turn these pounds to a couple rands, to a couple dollars. And I'ma need rubies and emeralds in my bezel. I met the devil, she isn't special. She listen to rap, not heavy metal. You ain't dripping, your dogs can barely pedal. And dog, I'm with my dogs. You can get bit in the dark. I'm dripping, you think it's a shark. Get bit, you're not big as your bark. I got some pits, I can pick you apart. With my dog, me aunt, Jack, are fresh. Let's go. I fumbled that one, but like, yeah. Yeah, I've put me on the spot. I'm emotional, dog. And then I need to rap. But like, yeah. But as a rapper, like, just always be prepared. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's the secret to interviews. Just as you're about to make them cry, make them rap.
My guy. I had to take the grill off for that one, too.
My manager is shouting because I think you are late for something.
Sharp, yeah.
Yeah. But listen, shout out, man.
Thank you.
Nothing but respect for you. You kick out. Omasepa.
Thank you.
And those that know, those that don't will wake up one day. That's all. And I think if we treated life like that, we'd all have more peace in our lives. Because we often seek validation where, and then what?
And then what?
Those that know. Those that love you know. And that's all that should matter in your life. Everything else is a bonus. Mudimu asipopai. Mudimu kicking kong. Mudimu stay showing up where you feel like you're alone. That's all that matters, my dude.
Mudimu asismata. King, man, I'm super inspired by you. You know,
yes, sir.
We grew up watching you, you know. We are because you are. So you just keep going, you know. May God fulfill you. Keep pouring into your cup so you can pour into other people's cup.
Yeah.
And we love you, dog. Appreciate you.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ricardo, do we have to go with the other R?
No.
Or get Ricardo first.
Ricardo is fine.
Yeah, Ricardo. Molloy.
Yeah.
It's as Portuguese.
Molloy.
Obrigado, my dude. Yeah. Obrigado.
Obrigado, pai.
Pretty Ugly is about to leave the building. Thank you for tuning in. It's been an incredible chat. We wanted to dig where many are not digging because there's more to this man than just raps. Hopefully you're inspired. And if you are not, Liwena Umuloi. Hashtag bars. I kill myself.
Oh, jeez.
Coming to you from Discover TV, we're part of the Africa Podcast Network. Email us at waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Shout out to Trevor and Pezulu Works for all of the cinematography. Kelezo Modisakeng, our executive producer. Lati for all of the additional production. And Lati and YBF for all of the behind the scenes and social media. Most importantly, shout out to you, man. We are nothing without you. Wayne Shid, we are because you are. Till next week. Yo, that was a dope chat.
It was too dope, man.
Till next week. Have a wow week in spite of yourselves. And you know the problem is? 90% of the prep we did, we haven't used.
Really?
Yeah.
That's why we need a part two.
No, we need a part two.
Yeah.
We need a part two. Have a great week in spite of yourselves. We're out of here. Now we're done.